Welcome to Outside the Lines, a podcast of our host Bob Cheviar and his co-host Scott Shannon. Bob and Scott are longtime teaching pros in Westchester County, New York. They have both been ranked in the top 15 nationally in men's 35 and 40 and over singles and doubles. Bob is also the author of Deconstructing Tennis, the 4D System. Together, Bob and Scott investigate many of the hidden secrets of playing good tennis, as well as offering their expert commentary on professional tennis.
Hi, all. It's Bob Cheviar here. Welcome to Outside the Lines, and I'm here with my co-host, Scott Shannon. And I think we've got a really interesting subject for a lot of you tennis players today. It's mixed doubles, how to play it, because a lot of things change in terms of shot selection and positioning in mixed doubles compared to same gender tennis. So we're going to get into that so that each of the players, each of you, no matter what your level is
or gender,
knows your proper role and what you're trying to do out there during the match. When we do speak of USTA, and we're going to get into that in a little bit, we're going to talk about 9-0, 8-0, and 7-0 levels of play, but we're going to consistently call the dominant player a 5-0 and the partner a 4-0. So if you're a 4-5 guy and you hear us talking 5-0, it applies to you in 8-0 mixed when you have the 3-5 partner, just terminology wise, so you can make sense of what we're going to do. Now, a little history, Scott, because you and I both became pros, I think, right in the aftermath of the Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs, the Battle of the Sexes match. And that match really was groundbreaking in that it got men and women to say, oh, wow, we can play tennis with and against each other. Whereas before, it wasn't quite the same mixing around. And I was speaking with one of our good buddies, Tom Carey, the other day, and he said, yeah, at my club, it was such a big event, but it got the nickname Divorce Doubles. And there were definitely, I mean, it really took something. I really feel like men have made quite a bit of progress in terms of the way they relate to their female partners. Back in the day, it was pretty ugly out there, the stuff that would go on. And I'm going to give us a little pat on the back for saying we've definitely made some progress here and not behaving as poorly as we used to. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think that the whole idea of taking the woman and sticking her in the doubles alley and then playing the rest of the court was not uncommon, especially in club mixed doubles. But even right up into the finals, like the man wanted to win at any cost, and humiliating his female party in front of many club members, he had no compunction about doing that. Unfortunately, the women went along with it to a certain degree until later.
Until they served him with papers, yes. So there are a couple of basic principles that really change in mixed doubles. One is, most of the time, you're going to end up using formations that play more to the extremes. In other words, a woman might be playing much closer to the net in mixed than in same gender doubles, or she might end up playing more baseline and avoiding the center of the court where her feet are exposed to perhaps cough the ball up and give the strong guy on the other side a chance to make a play. So varying formations, once you understand the strengths and weaknesses of your opponent and your own strengths and weaknesses on your side of the net, that's going to matter a lot. And I'd only say that I had some partners just a few years ago, and I found playing mixed doubles was really illustrative for them in terms of tactics, because the difference, let's say, between a 5-0 guy and a 4-0 woman on the other side of the net is huge. And it changes your shot selection and your appreciation of where the relative weaknesses lie. Are you part of that also, Scott?
Yeah, and I would add to it, Bob, that a lot of what you and I are going to talk about, and I think that makes the difference, is the strategic positioning of the female player on the court at the start of the point, and then, you know, under certain scenarios as the point gets going. I think that the smarter team, in terms of how you use the woman, you know, for lack of a better expression, that team is going to persevere. And I remember after playing at the Hastings Cup in the middle 70s, and I played against a very good team, Butch Seawagon, who was ranked, in the top 100 in the world.
Yeah, and he was national amateur champion 1 year before we got into pro tennis.
And then was coach at Columbia. What a great doubles player he was, actually, and he had a very good partner. And I realized, because I had not played much mixed doubles before that at that level, I realized that the woman made all the difference in terms of how the points went. If you were not able to keep your partner, your female partner, protected and have her hang in there during the point, then you were losing a lot of the points because the other male on the other side was able to take over. And obviously the same thing goes for my side, but I remember walking off the court and saying, oh my God, it's the female that really makes the difference in these mixed doubles matches.
Yeah. So can you tell us, I have a pretty good story about what it means to protect your partner, but can you give us an example of exactly what role does the guy have to play so the woman can feel at least somewhat comfortable playing in a mixed doubles match?
The way that I think about protecting my partner in those situations is that if, as the male player, I can't create enough offense and keep the other team on the defense, then I would sometimes have to bring my partner back to the baseline and take her out of that midcourt sitting duck situation. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't feel, because sometimes, you know, the women's serves, even though they may not be huge, you know, like at 100 or 110 miles an hour, very often you have this 5-0 man at the net who's poaching and faking and taking a lot of balls. So you have to really be very effective with the return. Otherwise your partner is going to get the ball right away, and, you know, in a forceful way. So I like to bring her back in those situations if I didn't feel I could effectively deal with the serve. And then if I did, I keep her in there at the service line or whatever. And then I would start to go at that guy who's moving around a lot, going over his head, going down the line, but keeping him a little more on the defense so that he couldn't just take advantage of my partner at the midcourt.
Yeah. So here's an example from my playing days and getting ready for this podcast. Wow. I was able to recall this match. It was maybe my third year at Chestnut Ridge. So let's say 1977. And I had a female student who was 12 years old, and she became number one in the East and the girls 12 and under. She had a great two-handed backhand. And we played in the first round of a tournament across town at Sawmill. We played Steve Ross, and he partnered up with the girl who was number one on the Horace Greeley High School team. So we were up against, let's say, a 17-year-old girl. And Steve Ross, for those of you who don't know, he beat Peter Fleming in his day and Gene Scott. I mean, he was quite the player, but he was all about ball control. And his serve, which worked out pretty well for him in singles, he actually served so it would go short in the box and stay below the level of the net. So you were pulled sort of forward, but you couldn't really attack it that well because the ball was so low. And amazingly, this worked out pretty well for him. He had an excellent career. But in mixed doubles, here's what happened. He had his Greeley girl up on top of the net serving to me with this short ball. And I took it and I whipped it right at her. Okay.
You mean old nasty guy?
I was a pretty young nasty guy, actually. But yeah. So I actually hit her with the ball maybe three times in a row. And she goes back to him and she says, "I'm going back." And he says, "Get up there."
you can hear that?
Yes, because if she had gone back, he was never going to touch the ball. We right. would have, Lucy and I both would have played to her and yeah. he would have been out of the match. And with the guy not hitting any balls in a mixed doubles match, usually the outcome's not going to be too good if that's what's going on in the match. Which reminds me of another short little story before we get into the details. I was playing practice with a partner and we were getting ready for the start of a mixed double season. And we were playing a pretty good team. And after a few games, we were up 5-love. So we sit down on the bench. And she says, "Bob, this is all wrong. I'm not hitting any shots." like, no, that's actually the whole idea. If we can structure the points so that I, as the guy who's the more powerful and accurate player, if I'm hitting every ball, how's the other team going to have a chance against us? We're doing everything perfectly well.
Right.
So people have to understand that difference as well when they're playing in a mixed doubles match. So one other thing before we get into some of the more nitty gritty of what's tactics. your job. Yeah. One thing right at the start of a match, it's usually true that if you win the toss, and you're playing mixed, your female partner, that is probably the weakest game that you're going to play. So I would almost always choose to receive serve so that in an extended set, she was the one who maybe wouldn't have to serve and we could get away with her only having to serve twice in a set in order to get that set. Did you do something similar?
You know, I can't remember exactly going through the thought process,
uh-huh.
but, you know, I think I was fairly savvy, you know, even at that time about figuring it out. And I think that you would always, you know, have the male serving first because you wouldn't want to, you know, be losing a game right off the bat and kind of inviting that by saying, well, I'm going to have the woman serve first. I mean, like, what for? You know, mm-hmm. you're going to be battling. You really need to hold her serve. And Bob, that's a pivotal thing in mixed doubles for people to pay attention to, is that what happens during that female partner serve? What happens during that game is so pivotal in terms of how the set is going to go. You must be able to produce, you know, some holding of serve. And so there's a lot of pressure on both players to play very smart, and for the male player to play very aggressive, because guess what? He's at the net. So there can't be, you have to make that other team feel like pressure all the time. And I was thinking about this earlier today, Bob. The woman, even if she doesn't have like a huge serve, and she's serving a lot of first serves and mixing it up a little bit, then the man at the net can like do a lot of moving and pick off a lot of balls. The woman is setting it up so the man can kind of take over.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to a lot, if the woman is going to a second serve a lot, you got troubles. Because first of all, the female receiver is going to be able to do more with the return and avoid the man at the net. And then that other partner, the 5-0 man, he's going to be able to attack, and he's going to negate the guy at the net. So your partner must know that the first serve actually becomes paramount in mixed doubles.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're going to get into a couple of different scenarios now, but I forgot a little piece of the story of with the Steve Ross match that I want to add in, because I think it's sort of fun. When we shook hands, the young woman who I had hit with the ball a few times, she didn't want to even speak to me or say anything, and she was quite upset. So I come off the court, and I wasn't feeling too good about that part. And who comes up to me but her mother and father? And here's what they say. We have a couple of younger children, and we're moving them to Chestnut Ridge. We love the way you play tennis.
And their daughter is saying, I'm going to go sleep at my friend's house tonight. Yeah. who are these people that live in my house?
So there are different ways to take that. You know, what happened out there, Lucy and I, by the way, we did end up winning the tournament. We played Lloyd Emanuel and his girlfriend at the time, Helen, who was Helen a pretty Cardano. Good player,
right.
And Gordon Adelot and his wife, Judy. Judy was one of the top female players in Westchester at the time. So we had some good wins out there. And Lucy, I mean, she was 12 years old. You could not get her to miss a backhand. She kept that ball in, or she could hit a topspin lob. She was fantastic.
What was her last name?
Miller. She was right here from Katona.
Wow.
So let's set this following scenario. And you're the 5-0 guy serving to a pair of 4-5s. Tell me, what do you think those 4-5s should be doing if they have any kind of chance to break your serve? Where should they be positioned?
I think the woman should play in the deuce side. And so I think the man should be at the service line and, you know, up in the court, ready to take the net or take any balls that come floating through. And then I think that the female receiving serve, unless they have like a really big shot that they can handle, there's going to be some pace from them, from my 5-0 serve. I think you go right over the girl's head who's at the net, and you get into the point. And if I'm a righty, I'm coming in, my backhand is now to my left where that lob is going. And they have us sort of neutralized and maybe even a little on the defensive. So, and then the man on the other side can begin to like move. And what am I going to do? Take a backhand overhead and hit it on an angle past him? No, he's going to come to the middle of the court and he's going to try to get anything he can get his racket on. And my partner has to be switching most likely. Let's say that the lob was a good one and she has to switch. She has to get back, because if the man gets the ball on the other side, he's going to nail it right at her, which will be the smart thing.
Okay. So I would say it's even a little tougher than you're making it seem. But first, let me mention the shot that you just talked about. when the deuce court player lobs down the line over the net player. And as the 5-0 guy, you have to come in and hit a high backhand volley from three-quarter court. I call that particular shot the universal weakness. There's not a player you're going to play in USTA who can hit a winner off of that shot. So you're immediately, almost anywhere else you put the ball, you lob it cross court, the 5-0 guy's going to line up an overhead and nail it. You hit a driving return, and he's going to get in good position and stick that first volley, usually in a spot that's really, really tough. But that universal weakness, it's so important to exploit being able to find that. Now, that being said, Scott, from the mix that I've seen, I feel like the deuce court female returner, they struggle to really control, even though they're trying to make a lob, which is the most defensive shot in tennis, they're still struggling to control that ball. So I actually, when I'm in that situation, I don't play at the service line. I go back because I want to be really in a defensive framework so that I can use my legs if she gets the ball back at all and try to get into the point with a little more space to get to that next shot.
Let me ask you something.
Yes.
You're not necessarily going to get the next ball. If you're back, it's going to be easier to avoid you when you're at the baseline than if you're at the midcourt. And you can always adjust yourself back. So, I mean, you have to give like a, I don't know, like a 50-50 chance to be able to go on some kind of offensive, because I agree that it's not going to be that easy if the 5-0 has a, and or if it's a 4-5 man too, you know, the pretty good serve going in there, the female has to get that ball up over the woman's head at the net. And then they're kind of like in fairly good shape. If she can't do that, well, then you have problems. And then I would maybe pull the person back.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you can't pull off that lob, and this is one thing that, I mean, for you and I, it's like instinct. If we're on complete defense, we're going to hit a lob. And many times I'll say to a student, well, you were really off balance and totally on defense. You had to lob that. And they reply, I couldn't lob because I was so much on defense. Well, yeah. That doesn't. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
You're on defense. You still have shot selection. It's not like you're falling over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we've already gotten into the whole tricky stuff that goes on in mixed doubles, because now you don't have your normal scenarios with serve, return to serve. So it's like, how quickly can you get the other team on the defensive using the position of the female to your advantage?
So I used to do one other thing, and this was playing like 8-0 mixed, which I did up until a few years ago. When the opponents, it was their turn to serve to my partner, I would stand with my back to the net and I would give her signals about where I wanted her to put the ball. And this was particularly valuable when their female was serving to her and you had the potential poacher at the net. And what started to happen and did happen was the other team started to get the idea that they were serving to me on both sides. She happened to swing the racket on the one side, but I was the one calling the play. And then, of course, when they were serving to me, I was calling my own play. But this was a really effective way, especially when I call for my partner to drive down the line and we catch the guy poaching. And then we'd be sure and say, like, yeah, that's the one. That's the play. Yeah. And that could really get in their heads.
Yeah, I mean, because they're expecting to be able to pick off a lot of balls there and everything. So I think it brings up the whole idea that you have to mix it up and you have to keep that 5-0 man honest in terms of his movement, so he doesn't just feel free rein. Because, you know, the return, if it's going cross court, it's got to be a really good one because he's probably starting to move pretty early. So mm-hmm. I think the whole idea of that's what I was saying before, is to go, you know, to go down the line and start to take away that particular play, because that's sort of like the logical play, right? So you have to get something in there that gets you into the point without that 5-0 man having something offensive to do up at the net.
Absolutely. So let's say now the 4.0 woman is serving to your team, and the 5-0 guy is now the poacher. Where are you going to situate your returning position in this situation, Scott?
So they're serving to you, and it's the woman serving, and the man's at the net. And so this is in the ad court, because I would always say the man should be playing in the ad court.
Pretty much true.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So where am I going to position? I am going to most likely keep my partner up, because I'm going to make a return that is going to negate the player at the net, because I'm going against the female server. So I should be able to stay away from that net player and keep them from taking control. So, and I would be doing a lot of chipping and charging, like taking that serve, which I'm assuming is not coming in like too hard. And I would be taking it cross court and staying away from the middle of the court and getting it over there and coming in behind it, putting the mm-hmm. pressure on right away.
And what about your partner then? When you know that you're going to have control of this return, is she playing at the service line, or have you moved her way up?
No, I would move her up. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, when you say way up, that implies that, you know, she's like, what, 5 feet from the net?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I might not put her too far out of position. Depends on her volley skills and her mobility. You know, you can figure those things out. But yes, I would move her like up. Even if it was a first serve, if the other team's female was not serving in such a way that made me feel that I was going to have a problem, I would put her up there right away.
Yeah, I used to run that play all the time. There was never any room at my net player's feet when that happened. So if they decided to go at her because they didn't want to hit to me, she was almost every time volleying from above the level of the net and able right. to execute some really good shots.
And if they lob over her, you have a forehand over there coming across the middle. You're on your forehand side. You either get an overhead there or you have a forehand volley, but you're not on the backhand weakness situation, right?
Exactly. Or the swing volley. I mean, I had the swing volley way back even in the wooden racket days. I didn't mind if someone got that ball on that side over my partner's head, because I could stay on offense.
Right.
By really going after that shot. So here's one other play that I think is pretty valuable. And we're going to go back and say again, the woman 4-0 is serving to the guy in the ad court. And what I like to do there, and I've seen this numerous times, the guy is used to ripping it cross court. You were saying chip charge, but some guys just like to take it and nail it.
Right.
And when they do, they have the low net to hit over and the nice long diagonal. If you go Australian against the guy, he doesn't feel quite as confident to nail that shot. So the woman will also most likely be having a forehand now to defend with, as opposed to her backhand. So on a couple of different levels, this is a good way to approach the extremely strong returning guy in the ad court. Go Australian, and you can defend with your forehand, and you can shorten the court up a little bit. And I don't think he's going to hit the ball quite as hard as he would on the long diagonal.
And the woman is not serving and coming in. She's just serving and moving over.
Exactly. She's not coming in. She's serving, staying at the baseline, because most likely she will still be on defense against this guy.
Right. I mean, if I was the man returning, though, I would return up the line. Shouldn't be too hard to do, depending on what this guy who's playing Australian is, right, doing.
Right.
But, you know, I would take that ball. I would get to the net like right away if I could. I have to avoid him first, obviously. Really comes down to if your female partner, I mean, we're talking as males, but if the female partner has a very effective serve, oh boy, you've got a good chance to hold serve for her and then and be breaking only once on the other team, the female.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That the woman's serve is key. Mm. So is there going to be any difference? I mean, let's say you're the 4-0 woman and you're serving to a 4-5 woman. I think you would say your consistent, solid, high percentage first serve is the one you should use most of the time.
Absolutely.
But if she's serving to the 5-0 guy, do you think she should take a few more chances with her serve on the, because just a good consistent one is sort of going to sit right in the zone for him and he's going to come back with a good shot every time. Is it worth it there for her to say, I'm going for a few big first serves, my bigger serve?
You know, maybe here and there, depending on what the score is. You know, if you miss that serve, now you're in a very almost ultra defensive situation, because what is your second serve, Matt? How is your second serve matching up against that 5-0 man?
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think in the, with having some creativity, I think you make a good point that you should not just stick to something that's predictable and whatever. Once in a while, and that's where the judgment comes in the middle of the match, which we've talked about in other podcasts, critiquing, you have to say, okay, on this point, go for your serve a little bit more, hit a good one up the tee, and then I'm going to be coming out of my alley and I'm going to be trying to take over when you need it.
So let's go back to your match when you played against Butch. Did you, I don't know that you can recall, because, you know, there may be a few cobwebs there to bring this back, but did you go for a little more on your serve when you were serving to him because you knew how strong his return was, or did you play your standard high percentage tennis?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I had a lot of confidence with my first serve. And I think, yes, I did do that with Butch.
Uh-huh.
He had such a world-class return of serve. And he didn't have really a weakness there. You know, his backhand was very good. And his forehand was solid.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he could avoid my partner. And he could do something with that return. So, yes, I went for more and kept up the pressure on Butch to try to keep him, you know, a little bit neutralized in that situation.
Yeah. So players, I hope that in talking about these different patterns, you get to see how much creativity can be involved in mixed doubles. Just one final story as we wrap up, Scott, was when I, like I was saying, with the Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs match, actually, as a young pro, I was giving a lot of mixed doubles clinics. And this one woman, when she would run into the net, she'd make an approach shot. Her husband would say, he's making an approach shot. He comes in. He then wants her to run back to the baseline. So someone is back And we nicknamed this the pulley system.
Yeah, right. I get it.
So there were a couple times we were playing in the clinic and she used the pulley system, even though he wasn't there and wasn't her partner. And I was like, what are you doing? And she said, it's what my husband tells me to do. So that's the way we'll close this one. Sometimes the husband beats the teaching pro when it comes to tactics.
Right. But I think the other thing to say is that husbands and wives should rarely be playing together.
Well, they do at my club now and they get along great. It's actually good.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So if it works, it works. But, you know, that's I think that, like you said, playing mix helps students learn how to find relative weaknesses in the opponents and then implement the tactics to take advantage of them, because you got to find the little cracks in the armor in mixed doubles because it's tricky.
Thank you, Scott. We're going to sign off.
Thanks, Bob.
And players, I hope you pick up a couple of mixed doubles tips. See you all soon.